Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, everybody, to Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Performance Enhancement Expert, and author, Sean Douglas. And this show is currently heard in over 40 countries, such as the U.S., India, the U.K., Norway, Canada, France, Australia, Panama. Thank you so much for those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing, highlighting those transformational moments that have changed our lives, and how we use these to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us every Wednesday and on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. However, on special days, like on a Tuesday or a Thursday, outside of our normal listening times, I host special pop-up episodes to highlight amazing people who have a book launch, product launch, event. So that is what we're doing today. This is a very special episode. You can join our Facebook community at Life Transformation Radio Community. Just search in Facebook, Life Transformation Radio Community. This show is on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn, and on the Google Play Music app. So subscribe on one of those platforms and you'll never miss an episode. Because on this show, we have impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today does exactly that. And if you have any questions for any of our guests during our live broadcast, you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. So please help me welcome to the show, Courtney Harris. How are you doing?
Hey, Sean. I'm doing so great. I'm excited to be here and just love what you're doing. So I'm pumped to be here with you and your audience today.
I am super excited because we've been talking about doing this for a while. I mean, we've been talking for a couple months. And I've got almost 15-year-old. He'll be 15 February 18th. And I've got an 11-year-old who thinks she's going on 18. So I am super pumped for some of the things that you're going to share with our listeners and some of the just the resources and really I'm really pumped to know about the problem solving and growing as a supportive family, because I didn't grow up that way. You know, I wasn't something that was taught to me as a parent. Maybe my aunts and uncles and maybe my grandparents a little bit, but as a child of, yeah, my parents were not the loving, like, let's hug it out and do any of that. You know what I mean? So really,
totally,
really pumped
for
this.
Well, sorry, that made me think of something already. I just wanted to dive in and share a quote. You know, I've been a teacher for the last 10 years, and there's this quote in classroom management, and I joke about it because it's like every teacher learns this. But the quote is, take time to make time. And that's like exactly what I do with young people. You know, I am helping them take the time right now to dig into their emotional intelligence, into their feelings, and to do all of this, honestly, really hard work, because it makes time for their life later. And, you know, you're sharing in your experience that, you know, that time wasn't taken, but you've made up for it. Like, now you have taken that time, maybe not in childhood, but in your growing up. And that, you know, brings in that idea of transformation that you talk and teach so much about. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you said one of my most favorite things in the world, emotional intelligence, because I believe that emotional intelligence has to be things that we have to master, you know, and a lot of people fail at it. A lot of my friends who are in the, you know, emotional intelligence space, like Jen Groover and a couple other guys, Julian Bradley, you know, they always say like your EQ is better than your IQ. You know, your EQ should be higher than your IQ. You know what I mean? It's not just enough to be book smart, but, you know, to be emotionally aware of yourself, to be emotionally aware of other people and how we all interact with each other. So my first question for you would be, why? Why do you do what you do?
So, I mean, it's how does anyone answer this question simply, right? Because we've arrived here through, I've arrived to this moment. We've all arrived to this moment through an interesting journey. But, you know, the first word that comes to mind is connection. And it's awesome that we're talking today because my favorite holiday happens to be Valentine's Day, which I have a long story, and I actually posted a blog about it yesterday, and it's about how Valentine's Day, specifically a Valentine's Day when I was 18, became my everyday why. So what I mean is that when I was 18, I was going through this like crappy breakup, you know, on again, off again relationship. I was, you know, preparing to be an adult in the world and trying to figure out what that meant. But I was feeling really alone and sad because it was Valentine's Day and I didn't have a partner. And instead, I decided to, well, I let the sadness be for a little while. Don't get me wrong. But then I started to kind of research, and I definitely have a researcher mind where I want to dig in and figure out why things are the way they are. So here I am, 18, and I'm like researching, okay, well, who's St. Valentine? What did he stand for? What's the deal, really? And I essentially came to the conclusion that Valentine's Day, as we know it, is just this, you know, Hallmark holiday, of course. And what it's really about is celebrating love for all the people that we love, not just romantic partners. Mm-hmm. But that idea then just kind of became, I expanded on the word love and actually expanded it more to connection. And I wanted to adopt the idea of how can I love and how can I connect every day, not just on this Hallmark holiday. So there's a longer version of the story, and it's a long journey for me to actually arrive more soundly into this idea of living it every day. But the insight really came to me when I was 18 and I just understood, like, this is not just, we're not just here to fall in love, or we're not just here for this one purpose, or to celebrate, these holidays in surfacey ways with roses and chocolates and things. Like, we are here to connect with other people and to really engage. And so that's honestly, that's my why I show up every day, and why I'm a truth teller, why I'm a writer, and why I'm now a life coach for teens and parents, is because connection is what we're here for.
Boom. I like it. And that's why I dubbed this episode Intentional Parenting, because mm-hmm. It definitely takes a level of intentionality. Let me read this real quick and kind of let everybody know kind of who we're dealing with here. You're a life coach for teens and parents, and you support tweens, teens, and young adults in finding their voice, growing confidence, and thriving. And through one-on-one and small group coaching sessions, teens and tweens are able to overcome anxiety, disconnect, and isolation as they discover their voice, explore their truest sense of self, and develop a deep sense of empowerment. You support parents in practicing self-care, growing alongside their children, and developing balanced sensitivity towards the process their rapidly changing child is creating. Through Intentional Parents of Tweens and Teens, an online membership for parents of adolescents, you offer parents the time and space to learn, grow, and problem solve, and relate in a supportive community. Sessions with you lovingly guide families in developing the trust, communication, and connection that's crucial for a life of ease. I think it's very important to key in on those buzzwords, you know, like rapidly changing child, overcome mm-hmm. anxiety, isolation. You know, when I hear those words, you know, I'm so sick of hearing another child committed suicide because of cyberbullying or family strife. Or, you know, like, it's just that hits me kind of hard.
Majorly.
And I think it should hit everybody who is a parent.
Yeah.
Kind of hard.
Yeah. And I mean, I would even just expand that out. Just we're all here. I have the, you know, the idea, right, that we all, it takes a village to raise a child, and that for sure this should hit parents hard. It should hit anybody that's a supporter of a child, you know, educators and coaches. But really, all of us in the world, we're all walking around as models of who we're creating the idea of what's possible for our youth, right? They see us and we are presenting to them the options or the possibilities. And so I definitely think this is like the work for all of us to do. And I, of course, get to do it in a very special way as a coach, but I'm definitely with you that this is community work.
Yeah. I posted a video on my Facebook earlier, and it's a graduation speech by a guy named, I believe his name's Rick Rigsby. And he talked about lessons he learned from a third grade dropout. It's on Goalcast. If you guys are listening, go to Goalcast and look for, you know, lessons from a third grade dropout. And what he was saying in there, he's like, my dad got up every morning at 3:45. Every morning, and read books, and like he was teaching us all this stuff, even though he dropped out at third grade, never graduated high school. And his mom asked him why. He said, because my boys might one day catch me in the act of excellence. And I was like, huh, like that like hit me. Because, you know, as a military member of the Air Force, one of our core values is excellence in all we do. And so I immediately was like, am I showing up in excellence in front of my kids? You know, like,
that was
a hard pill to swallow for me, because we want to believe that we're doing everything right, but are we, you know?
Totally.
So how do we know if we are?
So, you know, the idea, it's like, no one can really just get it right. There's not a manual for how to do this life. There's not really, there's not really like the right and the wrong. But we're always in this process. And like you said, if we can have these foundational questions and ideas that we come to, like if every day, you know, if you wrote that on your mirror in a dry erase marker, show up with excellence or model excellence or whatever, you know, you wanted to say, or another phrase that I use with parents is this creating connection? So if we use those foundational phrases, and they're kind of like mantras and daily practices and things that we think about each day and want to embody, and we show up and we do our best to live towards that, then yes, you're doing it, quote, right. And I think the idea that I like to believe in is that we're always in a process, always in progress, and we cannot strive for perfection, right? So of course, like, we want to be excellent all the time and we want to always be in connection, but that also means that there's going to be moments where we raise our voice and we yell, or the house is a mess, or we miss an appointment, or there are times when we do disconnect, or times when we do we're not our highest version of ourselves. But that's a part of how we keep moving, I think, to the next level of awakeness or consciousness. And so I guess the answer that is coming up for me is just using these ideas as our anchors and as our foundations, however feels right to you and productive for you, to fit them into your daily routines and rituals, and to use them, like I said, as anchors.
Yes. Absolutely. So how did you get to this point? What was kind of that path that you took to get to this moment right here? Go back, you know, a couple of years, 5, 10 years, however long. What was your journey like? What was your path?
Yeah, so I mentioned 18-year-old me and that breakup, and I'll go back there. First, school, I definitely was doing a lot of external seeking from, you know, I have to take all the AP classes and pass all my, you know, I have to read every single page that I'm assigned in AP bio, even if it means staying up till 3 a.m. I have, you know, I'm playing on the sports teams. I need to get noticed and playing soccer. I'm dating. I have boyfriends. I have friends, like all of these things outside of myself. But I really actually started to experience depression for the first time in high school, and actually felt rather lonely, which I could never understand. Like, how could I be so busy and have all these people in my life, including an active and engaged family, but still feel lonely. And so I could name that at the time. I was able to say, like, I'm feeling lonely or feeling depressed, but I didn't really say it to anybody outside of myself. Like, I knew it and I knew something was up, but I didn't go to the next step with it. And in my journey in going through college, and I went to an amazing college, St. Mary's College, an all women's school, and I started to actually own my voice. Like, I wanted to raise my hand and participate in all my classes. I kind of went from it being this like external thing to what is my actual learning process and how am I growing as a person? I started to really take that on in college. Okay. So the journey started to get deeper there. Mm-hmm. And then deeper still when I stepped into my first classroom. So out of college, I did Teach for America, started teaching. And that was where I started to see some of my same patterns happening in my students. Like, oh, they're looking outside. Okay. So it started to click that what was missing is that internal locus of control or that internal guide and voice that we want all of our children to have, but how do they get there? Like, no one's really teaching that, or at least for me, no one was really teaching that or even talking about it. It was almost like, you kind of keep your problems to yourself sort of thing. And mm-hmm. So when I stepped in the role of a leader of children, that's when it really started to go again to that next level. And my work as a teacher has been one of the most impactful and inspiring and challenging and beautiful parts of my life by far.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like every year I had the blessing of working with sometimes up to 175 students and getting to know them and getting to relate to them and build community with them. It's amazing and powerful.
Perfect.
And I mentioned this because in my role as a teacher, or in this journey of teaching, I continue to do my own self-study and my own healing on my own teenage years, right? So as I'm working with teens, I start healing myself and I'm building this massive tool set. I'm building all these ideas for, first of all, how I'm healing myself, but also how I can provide, like you said in my bio, space for teenagers to grow their voice and grow their confidence and to thrive. And so this is really the space that I've been in for these last 10 years, is personal growth, but also building community for teenagers.
There you go. So can you pinpoint exactly, you covered quite a bit. Can you pinpoint one transformational moment that really steered you in this direction and said, yep, this is my purpose, this is my path, this is my journey, this is my, like, this is what I need to be doing? You know what I mean? Because we feel that calling. Mm-hmm. I was never a speaker until I became a drill instructor for basic training and found out that I absolutely loved it. Like, that was my transformational moment into the speaking career.
Mm-hmm.
So can you pinpoint exactly that moment or a transformational time where you're like, yep, this is it, this is what I'm doing?
Yeah, so when there were a few, but the biggest one that's coming up for me is I actually decided to take a break from teaching because I really was starting to be a bit emotionally unsustainable for me, that I'm giving so much and I wasn't really able to do the self-care that I needed to sustain the career in a way that was great for me and great for my students. And so I stepped away and I was doing some work with a family. I was working privately as a nanny and a tutor. And it was a really interesting experience because it turned out to not be an excellent fit. And it actually was becoming a rather toxic work environment for me where I was, again, not emotionally, I wasn't doing emotional healing because I was actually going a little bit deeper into the turmoil in this space because it was toxic. And I have to share that what happened is one of the supervisors, one of my bosses, had relayed to me that I was delicate, sensitive, and weak. And I just took that and I thought, wow, what is that about? Yeah, right? Oh, it was you know, I definitely, I'm sure there were tears, because with me, there's tears for everything, the happy, sad, the laughter, all of it. But I sat with those words and I thought, what does this mean? And what it came to mean to me, and what I decided to own from it, is that I am sensitive, and I believe that that's actually my superpower. And so I actually transformed his phrase into a different phrase, delicate, sensitive, and gifted. So totally dropped the idea of weak, because I know that I'm not weak. I know that I'm resilient and strong. And I had this image of a wildflower in my head, like wildflowers are super resilient, but if you like, their petals are very, very delicate, but they grow, you know, in rocky, you know, rocky soil. They show up every year. They wait out all the winds. They are strong, but they are also sensitive and delicate. And so I owned this phrase. Okay. So delicate, sensitive, and gifted. And with that idea and sort of just coming to a fuller acknowledgement of really what my gifts and my superpowers are in the world, I just got really honest with myself and said, I named all of the parts of teaching that I loved, and that, again, I knew absolute gifts, and the way that I just served the world with grace and with power. And I decided, like, I'm ready to do this. I'm a coach. I'm a coach for teenagers. So that moment of having someone call me something that hurt and didn't resonate, and coming from this toxic environment, is actually what birthed this really beautiful ownership of who I really am, and, you know, a true, true sense of who I am.
Perfect. So what would you say has been the very best moment during your journey so far?
The journey as a coach, or just like my life journey?
I'll play your game. Let's do both.
Okay. So say the question again. So what has been the best moment?
Yeah. So what has been
journey?
The best moment so far in your personal and professional life?
I honestly wasn't really prepared for that question. So the good news is whatever comes up is probably the, you know, most honest answer.
Having kids, like, we get it, right? The kids are the best, you know what I mean? That type of stuff. Being married or whatever, like we get that. But I mean, is there
I don't have kids and I'm not married, so you got me.
Wow.
So
it's gonna be a truly honest answer.
Yeah. So I would definitely say, so a high point in my personal life is actually, this is interesting too. So I moved to Austin, Texas with a former partner, and we ended up breaking up really quickly after getting here. And this moment of me walking around Austin, I had like an amazing day where I went to like a hula hoop class, and then I went to a book club, and it was a weekend. And so I had this like whole day of connecting, and all these, again, there's my word, connecting. But I connected with all these different people and just felt so much joy in being in this city and in this space. And I remember it being this, like, I'm creating my life here. And I just had this very marked sense of, I get to be here. I get to own this place. You know, I didn't come here just for myself. I came with a partner, but when it fell apart, I stepped into this really deep sense of independence. And so I don't know, that's like a very special moment, because I'm still here in Austin.
Yeah.
I've still been creating a life here that I love, and meeting people that I love and care so deeply about. And so I think that's a very high moment that I look at with a lot of pride and also joy.
Awesome.
That's my personal. So my professional, I will share that one thing that was just an absolute joy and something I still come to tears over is, in my last year of teaching in a large public school, I taught a class called Social and Emotional Learning, which I say, AKA How to Be Human, and we all are still on the journey of SEL, or Social and Emotional Learning. So it's the best class ever. And during this course, I was teaching a process I learned through Writer's Workshop. And so all of my students were creating, and for some of them that was comics, and others it was poems or essays, but they were creating whatever it was that they wanted to, that expressed who they were and just this artifact of their life in that moment. And they were freshmen in high school, and they went through this massive publication process. So, you know, first of all, from collecting ideas of what they wanted to create to then, you know, creating the thing and editing it. And then we had a publication party where all of the pieces for each class were put together in a zine, and the kids got to see their work published, and we had a reading and a party. We had lots of food, and to see them say, like, I'm a writer, or look at, you know, look at my work that's published in this magazine, and to have their classmates leaving them kind notes and to feel inspired by one another, like, that was just magic, pure magic in the room, you know, seeing that joy and seeing my students be in their power.
That is incredible.
That's incredible.
So you know, we got to tell everybody that it's not all sunshine and rainbows, right? So what was one of the worst moments? I can give you one. What was one of the worst moments?
So a rough moment in the journey is, well, you know, coming to tears in front of a classroom, a class full of students that I was feeling like I was tired. I was not really sure what to do next. I had, you know, a massive class, 35 plus students, and feeling at odds with, how do I get you to engage with what I'm teaching, or how do I get you to care about what I care about? And to see, not how do I get you to care what I care about, but this idea of, like, I'm here to teach, but I'm struggling because classroom management can be really, really tough, right? And I'm at this point, I would say, a veteran teacher, and it's still tough. So having one of those days where I just felt like I couldn't do it, and it was almost like I already went through plan A, B, C, D. I don't really know what to do, and coming to tears in front of a class. And so I say that is one of the bad moments, but just like most of the bad moments, it also brings a lot of humility, and it brings a lot of opportunity to grow. And so actually what I got to do was apologize to students, to my students. And I realized that is super powerful, because I don't know about you, Sean, but when you think back to being a teenager, I wonder how many times you were apologized to, because I don't feel like I was apologized to very much as a teenager.
Yeah, no.
Right? I mean, teenagers actually have a pretty tough role in society. So, you know, that was a moment, and it was towards the end of my knowing that, like I said, when teaching was starting to feel unsustainable, and I was really feeling that, but trying to show up with my heart, but really being caught in the, how do I do this, right? And so that's a tough moment to know that I was doing work that I loved and care about all of my students, but also that there was something missing, or I was burnt out, or, you know, the end of the battery life there for a bit. So tough moment.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So along the way, you know, we're building networking community, we're building, you know, influencers and supporters. And so quickly talk about, you know, what are some of the influencers that you had along the way? Was it like a Tony Robbins? You know, we look at different coaches and different authors. Is there people that you've had that stick out to you, different mentors and coaches or whoever? Who's been your biggest influencers?
Yeah, so the first one that is coming to mind is Louise Hay and her work about healing the inner child. And she does a lot of work of her, you know, in fact, her text, You Can Heal Yourself. And so the idea of this process of owning our own healing, that is something that has been really instrumental to me in my own healing, but then in the work that I take to families and I take to teenagers. So her work has definitely been powerful. Honestly, this is not like a a person I can name, but my yoga practice. My yoga practice has been a massive teacher. And one of the teachers I've worked with along the way, her name is Christina Sell. And then here in Austin, some local teachers that have also studied in the same lineage is called Anyasara Yoga, which is now no longer. But in this lineage, I've met many teachers. And it's a very, very heart-centered practice. It is very much about connection and even in our body, connecting to our body and aligning the body in a connected way. And so that's been just yoga, the practice, and my teachers have been influential and really, you know, transformative teachers in my life for sure.
Awesome.
But, yeah.
I like it.
I guess I'll share one more.
Yeah.
Out of late. So Father Greg Boyle, he's a Catholic or a Jesuit priest out of LA, and he runs the largest gang member recovery center in the world. And his work, so no matter if you're not religious, if you're religious or not at all, this work is accessible. I mean, he is a thought leader that connects with other religious leaders and other thought leaders. And the work that he does in talking about kinship and with kinship, it's really like the deepest level of connection of how can we really treat one another as kin and love one another despite any differences, despite any harms and hurts, how can we break through to love? And the way that he writes, and he shares stories of, you know, gang members that have shot and killed people, right? And that have, yeah, like, you know, the people that are in a sense, some of our most vulnerable, but also who we are so afraid of often. So he writes about them with such beauty and such humility, and the stories, they make you laugh, they make you cry. And it really, it takes my, you know, my beliefs about connection to an even deeper level. And he is someone that I definitely consider a mentor and someone that I look to as for inspiration on the daily. So check him out for
it.
Sure. Father Greg Boyle, you got to read his books.
Greg Boyle, got it. Perfect. Perfect. I was writing everything down. I can't even write fast enough.
Yeah. That's how it goes.
So you said that you moved to Austin and kind of started a new business, kind of started a new life.
Yes.
Right? So if you had to do that all over again, you still had the knowledge that you have now, but you didn't really have the money, the connections, you just moved to a brand new place. You're completely starting over. What would be one of the first things that you would do?
So if I was going to do it all again, what would I do differently? Do people always tell you they don't want to do it differently? Because I kind of don't, right? But
it's usually, see, I love this question because I get some of the same answers, but sometimes there's that one that's like, really? Like, that's the one thing you would do? You know, like,
totally.
You're just like, I got a mentor, build a website, you know, like, nobody yet has been like, oh, definitely take out a loan from a bank, you know, like, no, because I think that's what they did the first time.
So funny. Yes.
But it's okay. Like,
well,
you know, find a mentor, find networking groups, meetup groups, start connecting, start, you know, it's just build your following. Like, you know, so I'm always curious what people say to this.
Yeah, I mean, my first actual, you know, insight with this one was if I could do the whole journey differently, honestly, I would love myself in a deeper level for longer than I have. And it's like, this is still the work that I'm doing, you know, every day waking up and figuring out how do I love myself more wholly and more deeply. And it's what I teach, but it's also a practice that I'm actively involved in. And so I would say that if I could have tapped into this, you know, when I shared about my gift, about becoming delicate, sensitive, and gifted, and really with the emphasis on that gifted, if I would have known that going in, I would have tapped into a lot of my superpowers much earlier on. And so how would I get there? I'm not quite sure. I think definitely, like you mentioned, mentors. I think having teachers and having mentors, maybe even starting yoga earlier. I mean, I don't think it would have changed the course of my life, but that is kind of the one thing that I can identify that I would like to have been in deeper self-awareness and self-love earlier on, because I also believe that would have made my teen years and my 20s much more peaceful and easeful, which of course we all want more of in our lives. So that would be my thing.
Love it. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. I'm just so fascinated by what people think the first thing they would do is, you know?
Hmm.
And I'm always expecting, like, okay, another mentor, another one, until I hear, like, kind of like what you were saying. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's all right. Because I think that people listening might be stuck, like, because they're either building a brand new business or they move somewhere and they have to do all this all over again. So that's kind of my mindset on the question. So let's talk about some of the resources that, you know, parents like me, you know, I have a 14, almost 15-year-old and an 11-year-old. What are some of the resources, you know, or what things should I be looking at, you know, when parenting, you know, this age group?
So my definite go-to and main strategy that I share is using a lot of open-ended questions. And the idea here is that, the idea is that kids and teens, they can just get told so many things, how to do things, right? And by the time your kid is a teenager, they already know what you expect of them. They already know what you believe, probably, like, politically, religiously, about your life, about your lifestyle, whatever. They already know this stuff. So they already know what you likely sort of, quote, expect of them, right? There's this, they know a lot. So if we are kind of talking to our teenagers and using language of, you need to do it this way, or sitting them down and limit setting, or sitting them down and saying our expectations, they don't really feel, first of all, they don't feel valued. They don't feel like agents of change in their own life or even in their family life. And they're probably not very engaged. And so the open-ended questions, I also say that this is hard at first, because if you haven't been using it, first of all, reminding yourself to use it is a hard journey in and of itself, but also your child might do a lot of shoulder shrugging or, I don't know, it's for a while. But the types of questions I'm talking about are, say, for example, okay, this has come up with a client recently, boundaries with a cell phone, right? How to build healthy boundaries for their teenager, or help their teenager build these boundaries. And so instead of saying, you have to turn in your phone to me at 9 o'clock every night, it's sitting down and having the conversation. What are you noticing about your relationship with your phone? And pausing and listening. And then, you know, what are you feeling like your phone is really supporting you with? Right? So I'm just kind of pulling these questions out of the air, but you can do this with anything from, how are you feeling about your semester exams coming up, right? Just something simple like that, to things that get more emotional after maybe a family conflict, coming in and asking, what do you notice we could do differently next time? And so it's giving the teenager a little bit of power. And when I use the word power, it's definitely not about this, like, hierarchical power. It's more of this internal, I understand that I am a force of change in the world and that I take actions that actually create consequence. And so when we ask the open-ended questions, we're giving our teenagers the space to figure out their power and to engage with us and feel a little bit more like partners with us. So even though parents still need to be the parent, they're asking their teenagers to co-create. And so open-ended questions is a really good go-to way to do it. And I have lots of actually series of these open-ended questions about different topics on my blog, even relating to topics like, how do we talk about relationships, academics, substances, anxiety. Right. So it's a pretty generalizable skill.
I love that. Yeah, that definitely helps. And I think that that might be a lot of the issue too, is we don't necessarily know where to go or who to talk to, or, you know, and we're always resorting to Google or, you know, something else, or someone's like, oh, read this book and you'll be all right. Or, oh, he needs Jesus. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think that once we get a grasp on where we can turn and we start getting a plan together, I think that, and, you know, and that's what you do. You know, you put a plan mm-hmm. together in place and say, hey, these are the things that you should do. And you know what I mean? But again, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, it's a plan.
Exactly.
It's got to be in place. It's got to be, you know, so I can tell you firsthand that because we're military, and some of the early 2-3-4-year-old son stuff that he had to deal with, you know, parents splitting up, because he's my stepson. Mm-hmm. So, you know, parents splitting up, then I come in, then we're in the military. So, you know, we have to move, or, you know, so, you know, he struggled, you know, a lot, and wasn't real. I mean, he's a personable dude, but he wasn't, sometimes he just would rather not just talk to nobody. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I don't care. I'm just go to school, whatever, you know, but he's yeah. also a super, super sensitive kid, to where he feels the need to stop bullies from bullying other kids, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
He feels the need to tell people, hey, what you said is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, that mm-hmm. might have hurt somebody's feelings. It's almost like you want to tell him to shut up and mind your own business, but he's kind of got a point. You probably shouldn't mm-hmm. act like that. You know, he's the one that will run up to a door because somebody didn't hold the door for a lady or a woman or whatever, and he'll run to the door and hold it for him, like, oh, you know. And he's super polite, and like he's one of the kids that you want, you know what I mean? But then he goes to school and he gets bullied, or somebody on the street says something to him or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the best thing I did was take him out of school and homeschool him. And it was almost like 100-degree different.
Wow.
You know, he wouldn't come home like, just hate my life. Like, what do you mean, hate your life? Like, what's wrong? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know. And I think that because we moved so many times, and this is the struggle with a lot of military kids,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, Utah is one way, Texas is another way, North Carolina is yep. another way, Oregon's another way, California's another way. You know, so he's going to all these schools, and they're all on different grade levels. So he's rocking it in Texas, sucking in North Carolina, crushing it in California, at the bottom in Oregon. You know, and I told, and one thing that I don't know, this just makes me mad. Why can't we all just be the same? You know what I mean? Like, if Oregon's standard is this and California's standard is that, like, all these kids that move around, especially from military families, like, it's such an injustice to say, well, you need to read at this level in North Carolina, but in Michigan, it's lower, so you're fine. It's fine, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to have I'm not saying standardized, but just, I mean, because I feel like we're failing the kids as they get older if they move around. You know what I mean? And I just don't think that when the kids, because I know for a fact that when my kid was placed in another grade at another school, it was, well, let me get your transcripts. Let me see where you are. Oh, you need to go to the exceptional child program, you know, because you're kind of behind, because, you know, we're a little bit farther, and, you know, our curriculum's a lot harder. And it's almost like they pride themselves on putting those kids down.
Wow. So, well, I feel so sorry that that has been your experience and your son's experience. And it sounds beyond frustrating. And it seems like a definitely felt like a lot of closed doors from a systems level. And I'm so sorry that that was your experience. Yeah.
But he's homeschooled and he loves it. So, you know, we have the K-12 program, the online. You know, the K-12, and he did that. And so we read together. We, you know, I check all his math. Like, he does, like, paper pencil, like, you know, like doing math. You know what I mean? And
he is
a better kid.
That's awesome. I'm so glad, though, that you all have found something that has worked. And one thing that that came up as you were sharing, that he is sensitive. And I don't know to what degree you mean that or how that shows up, but I actually would like to just speak to that point a little bit, that our schools really are set up, and most of our world actually is set up for people who identify as extroverts or people that do get their energy from being in groups. But for myself included as an introvert, it can be very stimulating. So here I was teaching 175 students as an introvert, and, like, no wonder I didn't have sustained energy. Right. And so we have many students, right? Many of our young people, many of my clients are highly sensitive or maybe even identify as introverts. And mm-hmm. therefore, school with bells and crowded hallways and changed
that's
classes
him.
Times a day, like that's too
yep.
much, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's too much for him. Yep.
So there's actually right two resources to share on that note is Susan Cain has a book called Quiet about introverts, but she has a younger reader's version that's more like middle grades, teens, accessible. And I think it's called the Power of Quiet, or I don't know. If you look up Quiet by Susan Cain, you'll mm-hmm. find the younger reader's version. And then another book by Dr. Elaine Aron, The Highly Sensitive Person and The Highly Sensitive Child. Those are some excellent resources for any parents listening that feel like they might have a child or a teen that tends to like quieter or seems to be overstimulated in loud places, even like at the mall or so.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are resources I'd love to share with anyone listening.
Perfect. You know, and of course they did the normal thing where they said, ADHD.
Oh, ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just give them some pills.
Yeah.
Oh. So I'm like, so yeah, that was, yeah, super frustrating. But you know, we're getting, you know, we get through it, and we just the one thing that I like to pride myself, and me and my wife both, you know, we both agree on this, is that we have no electronics at the dinner table. It's one of our times that, you know, we connect with the kids. You know, so I have a 3-year-old who thinks she runs the show. You know, like we're making dinner and I'm like, hey, kids, you know, let's get some plates on the table. I got it. Okay, well, we need some cups. We need some forks. I got it. Like, she won't let nobody do nothing. Like, she's like, no, it's mine. I got it. Like, she wants to do everything. And she's like a little mini me. She's 3 years old. She's like a little mini me, just like me. And then, aww. You know, you know, my daughter, who's 11, is kind of like that, but she's really well reserved. Mm-hmm. You know, she's kind of quiet, but I mean, she kind of takes after her brother. Mm-hmm. You know, but she's loud when she needs to. She's playing with friends. She's super loud. She's, you know, it's great. She's an extrovert, like when she's around groups or whatever. But when she's at home, she's just like super quiet and reserved. And, you know, and we thought about taking her out, but I think that maybe, you know, she's fine with school.
Mm-hmm,
you know, so
mm-hmm.
I just so that's what I was saying earlier, like, are we doing the right thing and how do we know, you know what I mean, that we're doing the right thing for our children?
Right. You know? I mean, I think that you're doing exactly it. You're continuing to ask that question. And then especially as they get older, continuing to ask them and helping them notice, am I feeling really comfortable at home? Am I feeling really comfortable at school? Like checking in with what they're feeling. Cause I mean, actually we don't ask mm-hmm. that of our kids a lot in society.
Right.
I mean, when I say we, I just mean yep. in general, like we're a pretty disconnected from our body and sensation sort of society. But you know, if we help our young people, like if you're, you know, asking these questions with your kids, what are you noticing when you're at school? What kinds of feelings do you have? Or when you're in the crowded lunchroom, how does that feel? And then even if we notice, like if we're with them somewhere and we see their body change, maybe they get curled up or they cross their arms or start doing something kind of closed, asking them, hey, you notice what's happening with your body or what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? And so I think that, you know, for parents to just keep checking in with yourself, because if you ask yourself each day how it's feeling, right? How this decision that you're making every day as a parent to be a parent is feeling and what areas there's tension, and just keep noticing that. And at the same time, checking in with your child and helping them build their emotional intelligence and build their understanding of what's happening to them in their life and how they're creating their life. I mean, that is the best you can do because again, there's no manual.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. Thank you so much for that. So, mm-hmm. so talk about, you know, what you enjoy most about what you do and some of the things that you got coming up, where you're headed, new businesses, families, got anything launching, and, you know, talk about that.
Yeah. So I am so excited because right now I'm working with a 17-year-old and we've been working with a lot of mantra practice. And mantra is just a phrase that you repeat over and over. And it can be, yeah, an affirmation. Exactly. And so he's been using mantras as a way to help him feel more comfortable and confident. And he's also been practicing this strategy that I have called the three C's, which you write about: a connection, a confidence, and a call to action for the next day. And I love that each week he's reporting the ways that he's feeling more positive. Like, he's actually noticing an energetic shift and telling me about it without me even asking. And so that is what I'm so excited about, is when my clients and the people I'm working with begin to take on the tools and strategies and own them in a way that they don't need me anymore, right? Like, I gave them the gems to build, to basically expand on the skills that they already have and just grow them even bigger in a way that they feel empowered to keep going out into the world. And of course, sometimes we have to always come back to our mentor or our coach, but we've gone to the next level. And so that's what I'm super excited about. And so right now in my practice, I do work one-on-one with teens and tweens directly, which is a super special part of the work that I do. There are a lot of parenting coaches out there, but I haven't seen as many coaches that do direct work with teens and tweens. And that is my passion and my specialty. I work online as well as locally here in Austin. So I work with clients all over. And I'm really excited because I'm also launching my Intentional Parents of Tweens and Teens, which is my online membership for parents of adolescents. So this is an amazing space for parents to have two live online coaching calls, to get weekly emails with tons of resources. And as we talked about that word intentional at the beginning, this is for people that want to be intentional about their path in parenting, just like you, Sean, and just like some of the questions that you've asked today. And I know the listeners hearing this, there's a lot of people that want to keep being intentional in all elements of their life, and parenting is a massive one. So this is a really, really exciting space, and I'm excited to grow this membership and to see a thriving community of parents, because I also noticed that parents of teenagers can start to feel isolated themselves, because it's not like elementary school where mm-hmm. you're getting hit up to bring in cupcakes to the party or to come volunteer in the classroom. Like, honestly, right? You don't have this built-in social situation with other parents, and you don't really necessarily know your kids' teachers all by name because they have 7 or 8. And so parents start to be pretty fearful as they're in this space of letting their child have their independence. And so this community is a place to know that you're not alone. And it is a space where I also teach and talk about self-care, because that is, again, a huge piece of what parents need in order to be sustained in their everyday work of parenting, and also in the rest of what they're creating in their lives. So that's what's coming up. And yeah, I'm also doing a lot of writing. So I write a blog every Tuesday. I also write with Raising World Children. And so I'm really excited to just continue to share resources with people near and far and parents of children of all ages.
Love it. And they can connect with you at CourtneyHarrisCoaching.com.
Yes.
And then go to Facebook.com/ Courtney Harris.
And that was
connect.
Actually Courtney. Yes. And you can just look me up, Courtney Harris Coaching on Facebook. It will come up.
Yep. There you go. And then she's on Instagram and she's on LinkedIn. So you gotta connect. I beg you, connect with her. If you have teenagers, you know, tweens, I mean, children of all ages, just you to connect with her. She is she's an amazing resource for all that. And I mean, I've learned a lot. I'm like, man, like, it gives me a lot to think about. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you've answered, you know, a lot of great questions, you know, about this topic. So as we wrap up, what would be your best nugget of knowledge that would motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action?
So my biggest nugget is stop, breathe, feel. That is a mantra, that is a practice, that is literally a life-changing skill. And yes, use this. I mean, I'm looking at it right now on my laptop on a post-it note, and I just replace the post-it note every time it gets folded up and crumpled up. So stop, breathe, and feel. Because if we can stop and take notice of where we are, how our body is, what's surrounding us, if we can take a breath and notice our feelings, we can keep moving forward in an intentional way. And you use the word transcend, and I believe that this is a pathway. This is a way to keep being and becoming our highest self. So it's pretty simple. Put it on a post-it note, write it on your mirror with a dry erase marker.
Perfect.
And practice this all day as many times as you can.
I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I tell some other people the same thing. You know, what's funny, real quick, one of the things that I started doing, and only because Jeff Hoffman, who is the founder of Priceline.com, I was at an event, and I'm in a community called One Life Fully Lived, and it's an amazing, amazing community. And one of the authors, Hal Elrod, and Mike and Lindsay McCarthy wrote a book called The Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. You know, it's how to connect on a deeper level. It's a great book. If you have a minute, you know, go pick it up. It's a great book. And so what they do is they do a kids conference too. So the adults go to one conference and the kids go to their own conference, and they learn like connectivity and entrepreneurship and, you know, learning and like all the cool things that like kids should be doing and need to be doing and whatever. Like they do it at this conference with like adult trainers.
Yeah.
And so Jeff Hoffman was there, you know, speaking, and afterwards we're all talking in the corner. And I was like, you really, like, you wrote a 3x5 card of whatever it was that you were working on, and you just read it every day. He's like, that's what I did. Like, Jeff Hoffman was like, I literally wrote on a 3x5 card, like, I will have a Ferrari, or I will have X amount of dollars, or I will whatever. And I looked at it every morning, and that was my why.
Yeah.
That everything I did that day was to get whatever that 3x5 card was. And then I'd cross it out and I'd write something underneath it. And then I'd cross that out and I'd write something underneath it. Every time I got it. But that's what I worked for. Like, no kidding. And I started doing that. And that was in June. And in December, I delivered my TEDx talk.
Yes,
so within six
I remember
months,
that.
Yeah, within 6 months. And I did the stupid 3x5 card. Like, I wrote on it. It was like, boom, there you go. Like, I'm going to do it. 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 And it was like, within 6 months, I did a TEDx talk. I was like, no way. So I crossed it out and I wrote something else. You know? So
it's
I'm
amazing.
Just like, when you had the card, I was like, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So yes. It reminds me
of things.
For sure. For sure. And it reminds me of this phrase, thoughts become things. And just, yes, if whatever thoughts we're feeding ourselves becomes a reality. So if you're feeding that on your 3x5 card and reading it and making it your reality, you're making it your reality, right? And so I love it. Beautiful.
And you can write affirmations. Like, I write affirmations on a card, stick them to your mirror, write them in dry erase marker on your mirror, whatever. But, you know, it's like the law of attraction, like by definition, you know, you speak it, you know, it's that big, what was that, like, beware of your thoughts because they become words, and the words become action, action become, you know, it's that whole thing, you know. But it's so true, because, you know, law of attraction is at work. You just reminded me of that whole thing. Okay, so as we wrap up, give us a call to action. So what should someone do today? You know, we talked about going to your website, CourtneyHarrisCoaching.com. CourtneyHarrisCoaching.com. Go check out the website. But what is a great call to action? What should someone do today to start setting themselves up for success?
So to start setting yourself up for success right now, especially this is for parents and caregivers, I say listen. Just listen. Yeah. So listen tonight over dinner. Listen tomorrow. And just notice. Do your very, very best to talk a little bit less, honestly, and to listen a little bit more. And that's a beautiful way to get into a lot of the tools that we've even talked about today. It just, the more you listen, the more you know what's feeling right, what's not feeling right. You know kind of what the next step is, and your child might guide you into that next step. So So lots of listening and being compassionate with yourself as you do this.
Love it. Oh my gosh. Love it. So thank you so much for your time today. And I'm so pumped that we got to do this.
Yay. Well, thank you so much, John. I love the community that you're building, and thanks so much for having me. It's been such a blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, what's the best way to find you? How should people connect with you? Let them know.
Okay. So yes, find me. I love connecting. I post a lot of questions and create space for dialogue. So connect with me on Facebook, Courtney Harris Coaching. You can find me under Courtney Lynn Harris on my personal profile, and CourtneyHarrisCoaching.com, and Instagram, Courtney Harris Coaching.
Perfect. Awesome. Right. Thank you so much
for your time today.
You crushed it.
Awesome. Thank you.
So, Life Transformation Radio listeners, another amazing guest that is impacting not only lives, but families, like on a deep level. So if you fall into one of these categories where you have a teenager, a tween, you know, child of all age, you got to connect with Courtney. She's going to set you up on the right path. She's going to make sure that you guys don't fail. So again, look her up, connect with her. If anything resonated with you on the show, you look us up on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM. We're on the Google Play Music app. Subscribe to the show, comment, like, share it out. That's how we grow. And that's how we let people know of the amazing guests like Courtney that come on the show. So as we close, I say live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out those values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call that living your brand. And until next episode, have a great night.